Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everyone, this episode of the podcast was brought to you by audible.com. If you want to download a free audiobook, just go to audibletrial.com/teacherluke or just click on one of the pictures on my website that says Audible. Okay, now let's get started. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Luke's English Podcast. Yes, it's time for another episode. Maybe you've been waiting by the computer all this time, sitting there staring at the screen, just desperately hoping that a new episode would appear. Well, the wait is up because here it is. We're rolling again and I'm recording another episode. I've been away for about a month. What have I been doing? Well, you know, just getting married and dealing with all of that kind of thing. I'll be doing an episode of the podcast about my wedding soon. But it's been a busy time, as you can probably expect, because that's what normally happens when I disappear for a month or so. It's usually because just general life is sort of taking precedence. Now, what's going on in this episode? Well, Paul Taylor is here again. Hello, Paul.
Hi, everyone.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good, good, good. We are in familiar surroundings here because yet again we're sitting upstairs. Well, I say sitting, I'm actually standing while doing this. I am now. I stood up at the beginning of the episode because I felt excited suddenly to be recording Luke's English Podcast again. I was like, I have to do this standing up.
Exactly. You look a bit like a teacher now, like I'm sitting down and you're about to teach me some English, which is what we're going to do during this
Maybe I
podcast.
Will teach you some English, because as we established in the last episode that you featured in, you don't know any words, it seems.
I know nothing about English.
Not strictly true, of course. No. I mean, obviously you're a perfectly competent speaker of English, but what happened in the last episode that Paul featured in was that we were up here on the terrace in the sunshine, and we played a vocabulary game. You might have listened to that episode. It was called 10 Fixed Expressions. And I had 10 fixed expressions. And I played a game with Paul where I had to describe and define the expressions, and Paul had to try and guess them. And it was interactive because you, the listeners, I invited you to try and play the game with us. The aim of the game was, can you guess the expressions before Paul? You might have beaten him. Some of you may have guessed more than him.
By some of the comments, I think some people did beat me.
Really?
Yeah.
Because there were a couple of expressions in there that you weren't familiar with. Maybe
no.
Just one or two.
Yeah.
So we will be doing that again in this episode. Another thing that's similar to previous episodes recently is that it's still boiling hot.
It is.
It's about 30-something degrees.
34 degrees, according to my Apple Watch.
34 degrees, according to the Apple Watch. And that's right, Paul is wearing an Apple Watch.
I am.
I'd like to know about the Apple Watch.
Yeah, I just twist it and then, pow, 34 degrees.
You can control the temperature with your watch?
Exactly. That's one of the features, one of the many features. I can control the temperature. I can control the time. I can time travel. That's
Seriously?
One of the features of the Apple Watch is time travel.
You've got to watch out for that, though, because you also have to be able to control space. If you travel in time, you need to travel in space,
yeah,
too.
That's the Apple Watch, too.
Really?
That's one of the features. The most requested feature was to control space. So right now, it's just time travel and temperature changing. The next one will be space.
Okay. None of this is true, by the way, listeners, just in case you were wondering. You probably realized that. You're like, oh, I see. They're just making it up for comedy purposes. Maybe some of you. You've got to be careful. Some people might be going, really? The Apple Watch, you can use it to control space-time? How do I get one? Is that why they're so expensive? That's what people might be thinking. So it's another hot day and the sun is shining. And so basically what you have in this situation is two partially ginger English men sitting in almost direct sunlight. And all of the drama and the comedy that ensues from that situation is going to be contained within this episode of the podcast. How are you doing in terms of the sunlight today, Paul?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I mean, we're under your little
canopy
type thing, automatic shutter, instead of it being like a vertical shutter that cuts off light from a window, it's actually horizontal, so it goes across the patio or terrace that you have. But I'm actually sitting right in the middle of the gap between the roof and the thing, so the sun is actually in my eyes.
There is a slight gap there, and if you sit in the wrong place, then the sun will get you. And in fact, the canopy is very nice, but by about the mid-afternoon, the sun dips below the cover of the canopy, and you end up getting blasted in the face by radiation again, because that's essentially what sunshine is. It's basically radiation.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah. And as usual, my legs are fully exposed to the sunlight.
Well, one leg. As usual, one leg is exposed in the sun. I remember thinking the last one, you had one leg that was in the sun, one leg that's out of the sun. And you've decided, because it was such a good recipe for a podcast, you've decided to do exactly the same thing again.
Basically trying to make sure the conditions are almost exactly the same as the last time we did this. just in an attempt to replicate the quality podcast episode that we produced last time. Okay, so Paul is here, and in this episode we are going to do, let's call it round two of our vocabulary game. Part one of this game, as I mentioned already, was called 10 Fixed Expressions, which, thinking about it now, strikes me as a slightly dull title.
A little bit.
I mean,
considering I didn't even know what a fixed expression was.
Well, that's the problem. I'm not sure that many people out there really know what a fixed expression is, and I have to explain it. It would be more useful to give the episode a slightly more sort of accessible title and slightly more engaging title, because I find 10 fixed expressions, you think, well, that doesn't sound very exciting. It
sounds like you went to a hardware store, bought 10 expressions and fixed them on the wall.
Yeah, it sounds like a DIY bookshelf. Sort of bookshelf. How to put up 10 fixed expressions. What we're going to be using is a butterfly joint. You'll need a Phillips screwdriver and some tungsten-tipped screws. Sounds like the most boring episode of the podcast.
And you'll obviously need a guy who's called Alan, who has many keys.
Yeah, Alan Key. Okay. You need to explain that, Paul. You can't just throw in an
Shut up, you said butterfly thing. I don't even know what a butterfly thing is. I let that slide.
True.
What was? Did you say a butterfly what?
A butterfly joint.
Butterfly joint.
But there's no such thing. I made it up.
Oh, did you?
On purpose, in order to make it sound... It was purposefully... obscure, you see, that was the point.
All right.
But anyway, an Allen key.
It's a guy called Alan who made a key that's got five sides that you, if you've ever been to IKEA and you've made a bit of furniture, you will have used an Allen key to build it. It's one of those L-shaped metal things that helps you to screw things in.
Sort of hexagonal thing that you can use to screw. If you've got a BMX bike or a bike, you'll probably have an Allen key for that as well, right? Yeah, I don't know why it's called an Allen key.
I think the guy who made it was called Alan.
Yeah, must...
That Alan!
Oi, Alan! Yeah, that must be the solution. Last time we did teach 10 expressions, 10 sort of, let's say, fixed expressions.
Yeah, you had 200 of them to start with.
Yeah.
And we got through...
That's right.
We got through 10.
We got through 10. So basically in this episode we're going to go through another set of expressions. So we will see what the title of this episode becomes. I might call it 10 more fixed expressions or 12 fixed expressions or something like that. We'll see. So the foundation of this episode is a vocabulary game, but it's also a chance for us to mess around a bit with some examples of the vocabulary as a way of ensuring that anyone listening to this will definitely understand all of the expressions that we're going to be looking at. Okay, so should we give it a different title? Maybe we could call it Vocabulary Game with Paul Taylor Number 2, which also sounds a bit too sort of pragmatic and descriptive.
That's even more boring than 10 fixed expressions.
Vocabulary Game with Paul Taylor Number 2. Anyway, I'll think of something. It has to be, you see, the point is the title has to be descriptive enough, but not so descriptive that it becomes sort of boring.
Should be teaching Paul Taylor English.
But anyway, essentially we're going to go through some more fixed expressions and we're going to play the same game that we did before. The rules of the game are that I have a number of fixed expressions in my hand. Where do these expressions come from? Well, recently on Facebook, I asked followers of Luke's English Podcast to send me their favourite phrases. And I got inundated with phrases. Some of them I've already dealt with on the podcast before. I've taught them previously. So That will be like a review of those phrases that you might have heard before. And other ones are just phrases that appeal to my listeners. And I've been through the list. I cut out some of the ones I think aren't that frequently used. And so the result is I've got something in the region of 200 phrases, and I'm slowly going through them in episodes of the podcast. If you want to see that list of 200, you'll have to go through the history of my Facebook page, or just be patient, because slowly but surely all of those phrases will find their way into episodes of Luke's English Podcast, for example, in games like this.
Yeah, and by 2063, the year 2063, we will have gone through all 200 of these phrases.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, step by step, you know, this you can't expect to learn all 200 in just one go.
Learning a language takes a long time. You know, it's not just an instantaneous thing. So
yeah,
you've got to be patient.
Yeah, step by step. That's the thing. Don't bite off more than you can chew.
Oh, there we go.
There's an expression
number one. Ding, ding, ding. 200 points.
That's not on the list that I just came up with, that one.
Yeah, bite off more than you can chew.
You've heard that before, right?
Yeah, I've heard that from many previous ex-girlfriends.
really?
But yeah, bite off more than you can chew just means that you shouldn't expect more than you can actually...
Don't try and be too ambitious. It's like, don't try and achieve more than
that's
you're
much
able
better
to
way
achieve.
Of saying it, yeah.
The Luke teacher's definition.
Yeah, that's a better definition of what I was trying to do. If you were coming from the US and you were coming on a trip in Europe, and you were only spending 1 week in Europe, and let's say as the US person, you might be like, oh, I want to visit Paris, France, Rome, Italy, Barcelona, Spain, Spain.
You have to add the country as
Edinburgh,
well.
Scotland. You might be like, well, you don't want to bite off more than you can chew because you're only here for 1 week. So maybe visit two or three cities. You don't need to visit, you know, 12 different cities. That would be biting off more than you can chew.
Exactly. Very good example, Paul. Exactly. Don't try and be over ambitious. You can't manage to see every city in Europe in just a week. So it's probably best to just sort of scale it down a bit. Equally, you can't expect necessarily to learn 400 words in just one episode of a podcast. So scale it down a bit. Don't be over ambitious. And I should say that to myself too, because sometimes I think to myself, I'm going to teach all of this stuff and I'm going to do all of these things in just one episode. And then obviously, you know, it's impossible because I've only got an hour. So sometimes I bite off more than I can chew as well. Literally bite something. Have you ever literally, not metaphorically, but literally, have you ever bitten off more than you can chew? For example, have you ever taken an extra large bite of a pizza and then been unable to actually chew it because it's so big in your mouth?
I have had, yes, I have. It's true. It happens more when I have a pizza with cured ham or you know, like Parma ham that's very difficult to chew.
Yeah.
If you bite into a pizza that has that on it, you initially bite, but you don't bite the whole bit of ham. So as you pull away the pizza from your mouth, then you feel like you have to do an extra bite to get the full, because otherwise it's difficult to do. So then you then have two bites of pizza in your mouth, and then you look like a bit of a pig when you're trying to eat, and your mouth is so full because you've got two massive chunks of pizza in there.
Exactly. Sometimes you get pizzas where all of the toppings on the pizza have all stuck together in one like huge sort of plate of topping. And it's what you've got then is like a big like load of toppings stuck together, and then a layer of slippery tomato sauce, and then the pizza base. And you take one bite from the pizza and you pull the entire topping with you, and then you're obliged to like try and stuff it all into your mouth. And then you die from suffocation. That happens to me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so these are not the expressions. We've just started with one. As it always happens on this podcast, sometimes just phrases just come out of nowhere and work their way into the episode. So like that one. So I was going to ask you, Paul, about your news before we start playing the game. But let's do that. Let's do a little quick summary of what's been going on recently. So what's up, Paul? What's new?
What is new? I've been doing comedy as much as possible.
Because you, the story is that, cut a long story short, you've basically gave up your job, a good job at Apple, in order to focus on doing comedy, stand-up comedy, full-time.
Yeah, that was the plan, and that still is the plan. So I quit my job, and I've been doing stand-up comedy for the past 3 months, basically every night of the week. Mm-hmm. And it's been going all right. It's been going well. So I've been doing that. We even did our own two-man show.
We did.
Last week, which was very cool. You know, we did half an hour on stage each. That was the first time I did half an hour. That was pretty cool. And, you know, we might even do that in September, starting in September.
Yeah, I'd like to
do it on a more regular basis. But that's been going, you know, pretty well, as well as I've been hoping it's been going. But what's interesting is some of the comedy nights that we play at are on the website TripAdvisor.
Yeah.
And people leave comments on the website TripAdvisor for our particular show. And last week we got a pretty negative comment.
We did, didn't we, Paul? I mean, this is for a comedy show which happens at a place called the Sogymnas every Saturday night. Sometimes you're on it, sometimes I'm on it, sometimes we're both on it.
And sometimes neither of us are on it.
In this case, we were both on it, and you were the host of the show.
I was.
Now, on TripAdvisor, this comedy show that we appear on Saturdays has an average of 4.5 stars out of 5. So it's 4.5 out of 5. So generally speaking, the reviews are good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, very good, really. But every now and then, you get a bad review, because that's the way it is in comedy. You can't please all the people all the time. Some people just, you know, and also some nights, admittedly, don't go so well as others. And
yeah.
So, you know, it's not always 5 stars out of 5.
The interesting thing was that particular night felt like it was all right. You know, people were laughing. Mm. We got some good comments straight after the show that people enjoyed it. So it was surprising to get such a bad comment. And the most interesting thing about the comment, because we discussed it as a group, over an email chain, the different comedians that were there that evening, is that, and the reason we're bringing it up is that it's kind of ambiguous, the comment in terms of English. I understood one thing, and people understood a different thing from what the woman has said, and we thought we'd talk about it because it's an interesting language problem.
Yeah, so basically we got a bad review on TripAdvisor for this show, which is fairly rare. But when it happens, it can be a bit of a punch to the stomach. You've got to expect bad reviews sometimes, but when it does happen, how do you feel about it? Because it always sort of hurts me. I hate reading negative reviews of myself. I think it's important. I think it happens when you're performing comedy that sometimes people are not going to enjoy it. So it's natural. So it shouldn't hurt too much. You know, you've got to take it with a pinch of salt. There's another expression.
There we go.
You've got to take it with a pinch of salt. You've got to have a balanced view and just know that you can't please all the people all the time.
Mm.
But what I find is that often I will ignore all the positive points, even though there are lots of them. For some reason, the positive points, they're like, yeah, great. But it's the negative ones that stick with me and really bother me.
Yeah.
Why don't I just remember all the positive things? Instead, I get sort of hurt by the negative things and I always remember them.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's just a natural human thing.
Yeah, it's weird. You know? So anyway, this review is a 1-star review. And it's quite interesting because, as Paul said, it's a little bit ambiguous because of the wording of the review. Now, basically what we're doing here is we're picking at this review from a language point of view as a way of getting revenge on the reviewer.
Exactly.
That's what I'm doing anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So here's how the review went. It said, worst cast ever. So the cast would mean all of the people who were on the show.
Yeah, that's the title of the review is worst cast ever.
Right. 1 star out of 5. And here's the review. It said, only hints of humour came from the host, Paul Taylor, who should ask for his job back at Apple. Don't go. Life is too short. And then there's no full stop at the end of that sentence, which makes me think, well, how short is life? Did you die during the middle of that sentence so that you forgot to put a full stop on the end?
I hope
maybe that's
did.
What it like. Don't go, life's too short. And then they died. Maybe. Or maybe they just forgot to put a full stop at the end of the sentence.
Yeah.
I realise I'm being pedantic, but that's my prerogative as an English teacher.
Now, when I read that comment, I read it as, because my name's in it, and I'm the only person who has been named out of the 6 people that were performing that night, it says, only hints of humour came from the host, Paul Taylor. Now, I read that as there were only a couple of hints of humour that came from me.
Yeah.
So basically, I was mainly shit, but at sometimes there were hints of humour. There were a little bits of humour that came from me. But when I spoke to a couple of other people, you included, you guys seemed to think that it was that I was the only one who had hints of humour.
Yeah.
In other words, if the sentence started with "the only hints of humour came from the host Paul Taylor," is very different to "only hints of humour came from the host Paul Taylor." So I understood one thing, people understood a different thing. We still don't know what the real thing is because we haven't, you know, obviously spoken to the person who wrote this review. So
the review is certainly negative in general for the show, but it's not clear if it's positive about Paul or negative about Paul.
So, well, they told me I should get my job back at Apple, so it's negative anyway.
Right, true. But I hope, listeners, you can see the ambiguity or you can hear the ambiguity. Only imagine it this way. Only hints of humour. Wait a minute. The only hints of humour in this show came from host Paul Taylor is one thing, meaning everyone else was crap and the only bits that were funny came from Paul. Or it's only hints of humour came from the host Paul Taylor, who should ask for his job back. So they're only sort of suggestions at humour, no actual humour from Paul. I think that's what it means, Paul, to be honest.
Well, it is, because if you were to say, first of all, if you wanted to say the only hints of humour came from the host, you would put the only hints of humour.
Right.
So she started a sentence with only hints of humour came from Paul and continued the sentence with who should ask for his job back at Apple. I don't think you would say the only hints of humour from the whole show came from Paul Taylor, who should also ask for his job back at Apple. Like there's no comma there. It's a very ambiguous. I'm reading it as basically I was shit and I only showed hints of humour and I should also ask for my job back at Apple.
Yeah, I understand that the whole show is crap and the only suggestions of funny bits came from you. Who should also ask?
Well, it's just a very personal attack as well. You know, I thought I was being vulnerable and funny by telling people that I'd quit my job on stage, and now I decided to speak in front of 20 people in an attic instead of speaking in front of 200 people in a 5-star hotel, which is what I used to do. And people laughed, and clearly this person thought. Here's the thing: either this person thought it's. I'm starting to think more and more that people who write these kind of reviews and go on a personal vendetta against people are just maybe jealous that they aren't able to do the same thing and quit their jobs to try and follow their dreams.
See, I don't know. Like, people don't realise that in order to become a very funny comedian, you have to go through many years of struggling and trying to find ways of being funny, and you have to endure people telling you that you're not good enough. No one, you know, none of these famous comedians that we all love arrive fully formed. They all go through years of difficulty. They all have bad gigs. That's how you learn. That's the only way that you develop those skills. Comedy is a magic trick. The thing about a magic trick is that there are all sorts of things going on that you don't see, and that's the illusion. It looks like magic. It's not. It's just skills and illusions tricking your eyes. Now, the same thing with comedy. What you don't see is the preparation, the writing of the material, the practicing, the fact that you've gone through your sentences and you've removed words here and you've emphasized other things there. And the overall effect is that it's funny because it takes the audience by surprise. And that's what's funny. And it looks like it's just a person talking about something in a casual way. And that betrays the fact that a lot of preparation has been done. So people don't realize that there's years and years of training involved in delivering that funny 10 minutes that they saw that guy on TV do once. And so when they see someone performing, when they know that someone has given up their job in order to become a comedian, they immediately expect that person to be as funny as the guy with 20 years experience that they saw on a Saturday night TV show. And they don't realize this is all part of your journey to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And so they judge you for it and they say, well, you clearly don't have the natural ability because, yeah, but they're wrong, you see. They're completely wrong because...
they might not be. Let's put it that way.
They
but
forget in about the training and the years of experience and the, you know, the resistance that you have to push against in order to get there.
But that's just, I mean, that was it was just an interesting example because it was a comment, you know, that everyone who performed that night were English native speakers. There was the both of us, there was Americans there, there were other English people there, and we all understood a different thing from that one comment. I understood one message, other people understood a different message. It was just interesting that even within the native English speaking community, it can be, we can misunderstand things if it's written in or said in a certain way.
So I would say, since they took the time to review us, I'm now taking the time to review the review, and my professional opinion of this review is that it's very badly written and not constructive, doesn't actually contain any constructive feedback. I mean, sure, if you don't enjoy the show, that's fine. You can say so, and it might help other travellers who might come to our show. But at least give us a couple of ways in which we can improve it. And I'm talking about constructive criticism. I'm not talking about give up and, not just give up and go back to your previous job, but something slightly more constructive would help. Instead, you just sound like a negative and not very nice person, right?
Yeah. I sent that comment to my ex-boss, who I'm good friends with.
The guy who was your boss, but then you quit.
Yeah. So the guy who was my manager at Apple before I left, and we're good friends. And I sent that message to him, and I think I said to him as a joke, like, I think I've made a mistake.
Yeah.
And what we haven't told you yet is the person who wrote this comment was from the United Kingdom. It tells you on TripAdvisor the city, and she's from Wigan, a place called Wigan, which is in the northwest or northeast?
Northwest.
Northwest of the UK. And his comment back to me after I sent him the screenshot was, she's from Wigan. That should tell you everything.
Oh, that's pretty harsh.
Yeah, so.
Okay. Well, there you go.
I don't have my job back at Apple.
Yeah. Anyway, the joys of reading negative reviews. It's something that if you're in the performance trade, then something that everyone has to deal with. It can be painful.
Yeah, but people sometimes will just give you a negative comment even if you're not asking for it. Like I just had 5 minutes before we started this podcast.
Yeah, just before we started the podcast, Paul received a comment on his website, and it was a huge essay. And it seems the essence of the essay, this comment, was give up, you're not naturally funny. Again, like the time
he could have written that, but he didn't. He was like, no, I need to explain myself for half an hour.
Yeah.
And you must have spent a lot of time writing that. If you're interested in finding out what exactly he said, you can go to my website in my blog section and read the negative comment there. It's quite long, and it's just interesting how people feel. It wasn't a thing. It wasn't a review for a show. It was just him writing stuff that was hurtful. That people are like, oh, you should do this. You're not funny. Your material is shit. You haven't improved it. It's not funny, and all this kind of stuff.
In the end, when you read between the lines of what he's saying, all he's saying is, I didn't find it funny, and therefore you should stop. But he could, if he was such an expert on comedy as he seems to think that he is, then he could have given you a lot more constructive criticism than that. The guy clearly doesn't know how to do comedy. Mm. If he knew how to do comedy, he would be giving you other advice, or he would just shut up and let you get on with it and understand that, people have to learn how to be funny. No one arrives fully formed. And if you believe that they do, you're wrong, because of the illusion of comedy. You just haven't seen all of these famous comedians like Michael McIntyre. He had probably, hundreds of bad gigs before he learned how to do it well every time.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone has that. It's the challenge with stand-up comedy is to try and be as funny as you are around a table with your friends, and try and be as funny like that as you are on stage with people that you don't know.
Yeah.
And that takes a long time. There's people who start doing stand-up comedy who in their personal lives are not funny, and that rarely works out. Mm. I think the people that succeed are the people that are funny in their personal lives, and then they spend about 5 to 10 years figuring out how to be the same funny on stage. So that's just what it is, but whatever, that's just part of life. Every great person, Richard Branson that created Virgin, I've read his autobiography, Steve Jobs, all these people came up with, had people like that in their lives telling them, you should stop doing this. It's not going to work. It's never going to work. And it eventually did. You just have to believe in what you're doing. So
I think if we bring this conversation round to learning English, I think it's the same thing. Because whether the negative comments come from other people or they come from yourself, you're always, if you want to achieve something or learn something or develop and get to a position where you're doing something very well, like overcoming a challenge, you will come up against resistance. And nothing is easy. If you want to achieve something, like genuinely achieve it, then there will be a lot of resistance and you have to be prepared to come up against it. So in this case, it's learning the art and craft of stand-up comedy, which is one of the hardest things to do in the world. It's one of the hardest forms of performance. I mean, it is. You know, many people agree. And there are many reasons why we don't have time to go into it, but there are. So in this case, it's, you know, the craft, learning the craft of stand-up. But it could be other things. It could be about learning English to a high level. And the resistance that you're going to come across there is usually from within yourself. It's usually, I can't do this and I don't feel confident and I'm going to make a fool of myself if I open my mouth and I say things wrong. And look at all these words in the dictionary. There's no way I can learn them all. And I can't pronounce the TH sound properly. And so I can't do anything. All of these, you know, sort of negative feelings will come up against you, and you just have to have the determination, the motivation, and the positivity to push through those obstacles, and in order to keep going. So it's, you know, it's like there's a poem, isn't it, by Rudyard Kipling or something, which is like, if you can keep your head while everyone else is losing theirs, then you'll be all right. And if you can keep going when everyone else is doubting you, then you'll be all right.
Yeah.
You know, it's those things.
Well, the classic example that I always hear from people, not necessarily learning English, because I think it's a little bit different. But if you're learning French, for example, and you come to Paris to live, the obstacles that you come up against is, you know, you have your basic level of French and then you go to a supermarket or a bakery or a bar or something like that and you start speaking in French. You say like bonjour, and as soon as they hear your accent, they start speaking to you in English and you're like, no, I don't want you to speak to me in English. I want to practice my French. And that's the obstacle that a lot of people who are learning languages come up with. The person in front of them wants to speak. I had a friend who went to Germany, same sort of thing. He wanted to learn German. And as soon as he showed up in Germany and spoke German a little bit with an accent, the German people would speak back to him in English because their English is much better than his German. But the only way that he could really improve was just overcoming that obstacle and just saying, hey, I want to, let me speak German to you because that's what I'm trying to do.
And in that situation where, I mean, that's probably not something that many non-native speakers of English experience when they're learning English, I imagine. I doubt that they would like come to London, like a Spanish person coming to London would speak English to, you know, someone in the library or whatever, and they would then reply to them in Spanish. I mean, it's not going to happen. But, I mean, it's just an example of one form of resistance. And ultimately, it's about pushing through barriers. And where does the motivation to push through these barriers come from? It comes from you. It comes from within yourself. So when I go, I suffer from it all the time, constantly. When I go out to a restaurant or something, or the barbers, like I speak to my barber in French. He's really great, my hairdresser. He forces me to speak French, and he speaks English to me. Right, so he's all right. He's a good guy because he understands. But in similar situations, I'll start speaking French, and they will speak English to me. And at that point, I've got a choice. I can take the easy road or the difficult road.
Yeah.
The easy road is to go, all right, then let's speak English. And then I become Teacher Luke. Because at that point, it basically becomes an English lesson. It does, because then I have to slow down and, you know, I've got to try and help them. Or I take the more difficult road and even though he speaks French to me, even though he speaks English to me, I respond in French. And then there's that sense of resistance of like, oh, this is socially awkward because he spoke English to me and yet I'm persevering with French. So you have to like break through the awkwardness of that situation and you have to stay motivated. So basically, the conclusion is you will come up against resistance if you try and achieve anything. And the resistance can come from outside or inside. You have to just be dedicated enough to push through it. And I think that's where confidence comes from too. I don't think confidence is a thing that you can just acquire. Confidence comes as a result of being determined to achieve something. And if you have the determination, it'll manifest itself as confidence. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's exactly right.
Yeah,
I'm confident that I can, you know, learn or get your fixed expressions that you have. I'm confident that this time I will do better than I did last time.
After 30 minutes of rambling introduction where we covered...
Yeah, it was a bit depressing for a while, wasn't it?
This negative review, and then we covered the, you know, the motivation to achieve things. We're now 30 minutes in. I think it's time to start this vocab game, Paul.
Pow, let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. So, all right.
Here Remind comes, me the rules.
The rules are I will define an expression for you, okay? A fixed expression in English.
Yes.
Like a phrase or a piece of vocabulary. Could be a phrasal verb, could be a saying or an idiom. Just some piece of vocabulary, basically. I'll define it for you, and you have to try and guess the expression I'm looking for. Listeners, you can try to guess the expressions too. Do you manage to guess it before Paul?
No, I'm going to get them all before anyone now.
Paul's feeling
That's my challenge.
Now after that sort of pep talk that we had. Paul's now feeling extra confident. So, ladies and gentlemen, you've got to be on your best form in order to try and pick up on these phrases. There are some difficult ones in this list now.
All right, you just got to be good at describing them.
Yeah, I will. I'll make the description a bit abstract first, and then I'll close in and make it easier and easier until you get it.
Okay? Sounds good.
All right, so the first phrase, it actually comes from Shakespeare. I think it's the title of a Shakespeare play. In fact, I know it is.
Twelfth Night.
It's not Twelfth Night. Don't list all the Shakespeare plays now. Hamlet, Macbeth. So this one is basically a phrase that you say when there was a difficult situation, a situation that involved trouble and disagreement and problems, but then in the end... it resolved itself, and that the end result of the situation was happy, and so you just sort of forget about all of the difficult things that happened.
To brush something under the carpet.
No, that's like to hide something.
Yeah, that is.
You know,
isn't
to,
it?
Like to hide a problem by just sort of putting it out of sight. Now, in this case, let's say, for example, let's say that random example, there was a wedding.
Yep.
And there were lots of disagreements, you know, during the preparation for the wedding.
Yep.
And lots of problems, like the families argued with each other, and it was very difficult. But then on the day, this is not a real example.
I was going to say, is this a personal real
this
experience?
This is not a personal real experience, okay? I knew that you were going to say that. But no, my wedding was great. It went relatively smoothly, and I will be talking about it at length in an episode of the podcast.
All right, so everyone's arguing, and on the day...
During the preparations for the wedding, there are lots of problems and arguments.
Right.
And then the actual day, in the end, it works out fine and there were no problems. And everyone at the end is smiling and happy.
All right.
And so that makes all of the other problems okay. We forget about the other
problems.
All right,
you need to give me a clue. Like,
so everything that finishes in a good way is good. Or everything's... Everything is good when the end result is good.
Everything is good when
it begins with all.
All good.
All's well that ends well.
Yeah, I knew that.
You knew
all's
that.
All's well that ends well.
Say it again.
All's well that ends well.
Yeah. So it'd be like, oh, well, you know, the preparation for the wedding was a nightmare. You know, I thought that our families were going to kill each other, but then, you know, everyone got drunk and had a great party. So I suppose all's well that ends well.
Yeah, I don't think anyone uses that.
What, really?
It's like your ace, your version of ace. Like no one says ace.
No one says ace?
No one says ace. No one says that. No one I know.
Well, why does it exist in the language?
Because, as you said, it was a Shakespeare thing.
All's well that, no, it's a phrase that people use sometimes.
Yeah.
They might not say it every day. You know, like, you know, go to the bakery.
It's
go,
true.
Like, some bread, please. There you go. That's £1. Thanks. Well, all's well that ends well. Yeah, you too. Like, they're not using it every day, but it is a phrase that is out there.
It is a phrase because I knew it. So then it is a phrase. But no, not very many people use it. Okay, cool. I didn't get that one. Hopefully you guys got it. I'm sure you didn't. But anyway.
He's just saying that because he's bitter because he didn't get
it.
Right,
next one, go.
All right, here comes another one, which actually comes from the Bible, Paul. I realise...
Can we just keep going back in time in terms of how old these phrases have been around? This was when cavemen used to talk to each other.
I realise that you're almost completely illiterate, and so anything that's written in a book, you don't know.
This is true. I don't read much. I ain't got time.
So this is... an expression that relates to a sort of form of justice, like where, you know, one person commits a crime and the appropriate form of justice would be to make them the same level of victim. For example, if someone steals your car, okay, then the right response would be for their car to be stolen, because it relates to a body part.
Oh,
it's right. It's two body parts. For example, if I poke out a part.
Oh, eye for an eye.
Yeah.
Pow!
An eye for eye, a tooth for a tooth.
Right.
That's the expression.
I didn't know the tooth bit. I just knew eye for an eye.
Well, it's eye for an eye for an eye is the most common one. Okay. But sometimes you can a tooth for a tooth.
An ear for an ear? That doesn't work.
No.
Just a tooth. It's just teeth and eyes.
Teeth and eyes.
Okay.
I think probably back in the time when, you know, many years ago when the Bible was written, I think maybe it was quite common for people to lose eyes and teeth. It's more difficult to lose an ear.
That's true. Unless you're Mike Tyson.
Well, he gained an ear.
The people who fight Mike Tyson, or
Evander Holyfield.
Yeah, or Vincent Van Gogh.
Yeah,
or Van Gogh. Or
to be
Van
fair,
Hoch.
He didn't lose his ear. He actually intentionally removed it.
He might have been thinking what I was thinking. He probably thought an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Well, I guess I should take my ear. Whatever, it doesn't matter.
But he wasn't. He didn't remove his ear as a form of compensation to someone who'd given their ear to him. Anyway,
all right, an eye for an eye. Good.
That's a good one.
Is that from the Bible?
Yeah, apparently. Yeah.
Okay.
What do you think, Paul? Do you agree with that? An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth?
I think I think most people will agree of the certain thing. You know, like if you go downstairs to your car that's been parked and somebody has cut your tires or slashed your tires, I think immediately your human reaction is, I want to find the guy and do the same thing to him.
I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want. I know that you've slashed my tires.
I don't know why Liam Neeson would have slashed.
I have a pocket knife. I'm going to find you. I don't care that you don't have a car. I'll slash your bike tyres. But I will have my revenge.
An eye for an eye. So that TripAdvisor review, in theory, we should go find what Lindsay from Wigan does for a living and leave a shit review on her thing.
What do you think Lindsay from Wigan does? Probably works in an office.
She probably does.
So I'm
hoping she would run a restaurant. And here's the other thing about that review, is that it's the only review she's ever left on TripAdvisor.
Wow.
She hasn't. It's the one review, and that's it. So it's like she really set up a TripAdvisor account just to leave a bad review. Anyway, eye for an eye.
Oh, Lord. That's painful. The trouble that she went to.
Mm.
Like, setting up a TripAdvisor account. You need to...
Maybe she thought eye for an eye. Maybe she thought, you did not make me laugh for the entire section... The entire hour of you hosting the show.
Yeah.
So, eye for an eye, I'm going to leave you a bad review.
Yeah, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Gandhi said... Gandhi disagreed with this.
Did he?
Mahatma Gandhi, yeah. He said, an eye for an eye makes... an eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind.
That's a very profound thing to say. I mean, in theory, you should just forgive and forget.
Yeah.
I
personally... I'm not sure I agree with an eye for an eye, because it's like the death penalty. I don't agree with the death penalty. If you kill someone, the penalty shouldn't be that you get killed, because killing is wrong. You know, that's the bottom line, isn't it?
Yeah.
But also, I'm not sure about what Gandhi said, because an eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind. Well, it doesn't.
No.
What you end up with is just one one cyclops who rules the world.
Exactly.
Because if you think about it, you know, I poke your eye out. You take revenge by poking my eye out.
Yeah, but then you poke me.
Then I poke your eye out again, and then you're blind, and I've got one eye, and I run away from you. So basically, the world is left with one-eyed guy who rules the world because everyone else is blind.
No, because then you would go and then stab somebody else's eye.
Yeah.
And then they would stab your eye, and then...
Then
you're blind, and then he's walking around. You would end up... You've thought about this way too much.
Ultimately, there will be one person left on Earth who's got one eye.
One eye. So one cyclops ruling person. Great. That's a good film.
So it should be... Gandhi should have thought about that more carefully, and he should have said, an eye for an eye leaves one cyclops king to rule the Earth forever.
That's the tagline to that film called Cyclops Rules.
Right.
Anyway.
Okay. So that's the second one. Third one. This is an... okay, everyone? You still listening to this? It's a slightly rambling episode, this one. It's not as good as the last one that we did, is it?
I don't know. Maybe. Keep going.
It's different.
It might become better.
It's different. It's got extra value, different kind
of value.
It does.
It's got some serious thoughts about overcoming obstacles in life.
Yeah.
And pursuing your dreams and all that nonsense.
And a bunch of fixed expressions.
Exactly. I mean, what more could you want?
What more could you want? Maybe a pizza.
Well, maybe somebody is listening to this while eating a pizza.
Yeah, in which case, you've got everything.
In which case, they've bitten off more than they can chew.
Well, depends. Depends, doesn't it? Depends.
All right, next one.
Okay. So here comes number three. And this is a phrase that has appeared on the podcast before.
Okay.
Just to give a little heads up to my listeners there. All right, so this one is what you say. It's like a particularly British phrase. And it's something you say at the end of describing a process. And it's what you say to say, what it means is, and there you are. Or, and that's the result of that thing. All right. So it relates to a member of your family. So it's like,
Bob's your uncle.
Yay! Got it. Do this, do that, and Bob's your uncle.
Bob is your uncle.
Right.
Now. And Fanny's your aunt.
Yeah, exactly, which is the other way of extending that. We've got an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and Bob's your uncle and Fanny is your aunt. But Bob's your uncle is the most common part of that phrase. Mm-hmm. Give me an example of, and Bob's your uncle. Tell me how to do something and then say Bob's your uncle at the end.
Well, basically, in order to succeed in stand-up comedy, Luke, right, what you have to do is you have to take the microphone,
yeah,
and speak into it,
yeah,
and make people laugh by telling jokes, yeah, that have a setup and a punchline.
Right.
They will then laugh, uh-huh, leave you a good review on TripAdvisor, yeah, and Bob's your uncle.
Right. Sounds so simple.
Yeah, it is. They could also leave you a bad review.
Right. So here's the other approach, right? Here's the other side of that to that coin. Oh, it's simple. What you need to do is get a microphone, plug it into a sound system, make sure that you've got a room. You might want to just invite a couple of people, maybe two people in the audience, and then you say things with the intention of making them laugh, but they come out wrong, and the result is that no one finds it funny, and in fact they leave with a sense of hatred towards you, and then they go on TripAdvisor. They take the time to create a whole TripAdvisor profile. They have to come up with a secure password. It takes them half an hour, and then they write a very hastily written review. After that half an hour registration process, they forget to leave a full stop at the end, and the result is that everyone gets pissed off and irritated, and Bob's your uncle.
There you go.
Oh dear. All right, so there you go. How do you make a cup of tea, Paul?
How do I make a cup, yeah, of tea? First of all, I fill the kettle up with, right, fresh water. Mm-hmm. I put it on the boil.
Right.
Set it to boil. Get the cup out. Get the tea bag. Put it in the cup. Put some milk in there. Once the kettle's boiled, you put the water in the cup.
Yeah.
Stir it around a little bit, and Bob's your uncle.
Hey.
You got a fresh cup of tea.
Lovely. Okay, so you put the milk in first.
Yeah. Not to stain the cup.
Controversial.
I know.
Okay, interesting.
Because you've got a white cup,
yeah,
and you put the tea in first with, right, the water, and then you put the milk in last, then the tea tends to stain the cup.
Oh, I see. So you're doing it as a protective measure.
Yeah, also the milk tends to mix with the tea a little bit.
Mm.
Gives it a cool, nice, that's little milky tea flavour.
Pre-tea.
Pre-tea.
I see. Okay, so there you go. That's how you make a cup of tea, according to Paul Table. Paul Table. Paul Table. Yeah, I'm a useful bloke. My name's Paul Table.
That should be my new comedy stage name. Please welcome to the stage, Paul Table. And it's just a table on the stage.
Pool table.
Pool table.
In some parts of the world, they'll probably be like, oh, a pool table? Let's have a game.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Paul Table. Or pole table?
Yeah.
All right, number four. I'm not that keen on this one.
Well, skip it then.
No, I'm not skipping it. I'm going to do it anyway because it is a phrase. But I don't personally use it, but I've heard it. Obviously.
All right. Well, if you don't use it, then I definitely probably won't use it.
Okay, all right. Definitely probably.
Definitely probably.
Sure.
What's that called? An oxymoron, is it?
Just a moron. All right. So, this is an expression that you use. And I say you, I mean people in general.
That one uses.
Yeah. This is an expression that one uses to express disbelief. To express the idea that, oh yeah, that's not going to happen, or yeah, I don't.
No way, Jose.
No way, Jose is good, but it's not right.
It doesn't involve a Mexican, this one.
No, or Spanish person, or indeed anyone who comes from a language in which Spanish is the first language.
Okay.
Just cough there, just in case you were wondering what that.
So disbelief.
Was. Disbelief. So it's like, oh yeah, England are definitely going to win the World Cup this year. Oh yeah, and
Oh.
It involves an animal. In the air that you
and pigs will fly.
Yes,
Ding, 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 ding. 200 points for Paul Taylor.
Let's have a round of applause for the studio audience.
That was really good.
And pigs will fly. So, you know, oh, yeah, England are going to win the World Cup. Oh, yeah, and pigs will fly. As if to say, oh, yeah, that's not going to happen. And pigs will fly. England is going to become the world's top wine producer, Paul. I read this in the an unreliable newspaper recently that said that because of global warming, the general temperature in the UK is going to rise, and that is going to allow southern parts of England to start producing wine. And reports, you know, fairly unobjective and biased reports have indicated that the UK is set to become the world's top wine producer in the future.
Great. As if we didn't even need any more alcohol, now we'll have our own good wine.
Yeah.
You know what the...
And pigs might fly.
That's
what I was looking
for. The French word for that is funny because the French have a similar phrase, but it involves another animal.
Yeah.
And the French phrase is when chickens will have teeth.
When chickens will have teeth.
Yeah. Which is very strange.
Which obviously is never going to happen.
So pigs might fly or chickens have teeth.
Right. Okay. And pigs will fly and pigs might fly.
Pigs might fly.
The only time I've seen a pig flying is on the album cover of a Pink Floyd album.
Yep.
Animals, there's a pig flying in that one. But that's the only time. Next, let's move on to number five. We are currently at 50 minutes, Paul. Is this going to be called five fixed expressions? We'll see. Yeah. So, here's another one that involves animals.
Okay.
And it's used when you want to say, well, that's a completely different situation, or that's a completely different case.
Different kettle of fish.
Yes.
Smashed it.
That's another kettle of fish, I would say. Yeah, that's another kettle of fish.
Another kettle of fish.
Right.
Yeah, you don't want to make tea with a kettle of fish.
No, certainly not.
You just want a normal kettle that has water in it.
Yeah, but let's just go back to how that's another kettle of fish would be used.
All right.
Let's say you're...
Well, you could say, hey, the comparison, you know, with the difference, going back to comedy, since we've been talking about it for a while.
A bit too long, maybe.
You know, music, people who are famous music artists, people like their music, they come and see them at concerts, and they really like the music and they want to hear the song again and again and again. Like, you can listen to the song many, many times.
Right.
But that's not the same with comedy because it's a different kettle of fish.
Right.
You know, comedy, if you hear the joke once, it makes you laugh. If you hear the joke twice, it'll make you laugh, but less.
Yeah.
You can't hear the same joke 50,000 times.
Right.
Whereas you could listen to the music.
Yeah.
But, you know, comedy's a different kettle of fish.
It's a totally different kettle. It's another kettle of
fish. See, I've heard different kettle of fish.
I think that's all right. Yeah, right. I think that's a different kettle of fish, and that's another kettle of fish. I think they're both valid phrases. Okay, let's go on to number six. All right, stepping up the pace here. So this is an expression. It relates to food.
Yep.
It involves some food, and it's just a way of saying that it's really cheap.
Cheapest chips.
Yes.
Pow! Look at this. We're on a roll now.
Now we're getting into a rhythm here. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's as cheap as chips. Can you think of something that's as cheap as chips?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we always talk about how expensive Paris is.
Yeah.
You know, a pint of beer in Paris will set you back about €7, €8.
Yeah.
Depending on when on which bar you go to.
Yeah.
In London, it's as cheap as chips compared to Paris. It's about £3, £4.
Well, it's a bit more than that these days.
Is
about
it?
Four quid.
Yeah.
£4.50.
And maybe the exchange rate's changed.
Depends where you are. Depends on which part of town you're in. But
H&M clothing is as cheap as chips compared to, you know, Prada or Gucci. If you just want to buy a nice white shirt, you could go to H&M and it's as cheap as chips.
H&M. Do you have H&M in your countries, ladies and gentlemen? I know that H&M are in many places around the world. They're one of these sort of trendy clothes shops that sells, you know, well, pretty cheap clothing, and it is as cheap as chips. And yet you wonder how it's produced. It's probably made by
children.
Well,
you know why it's called... Yeah, well, it's as cheap as chips because the people who produce it, basically, they only get fed chips on their lunch break. That's all they eat on their lunch break.
If they get a lunch break.
Yeah.
Probably in some sweatshop somewhere. It just doesn't bear thinking about.
No.
I don't... You know, for that reason, I always feel a little bit awkward about shopping in H&M because I think, oh, this is a nice cheap shirt, but why is it so cheap? It's because it's been... You know, made by people in sort of pretty bad
there's
conditions.
Well, there's two. That's the
maybe. I mean, I don't know actually about. I don't mean to say anything litigious about H&M, but you know, it makes you wonder, doesn't it? You know, why their stuff is so
the
cheap.
World is divided into two types of countries. Ones that are exploited, and the ones that do the exploitation. So you either live in a country that exploits other countries in order to get the stuff that you like, or you're one of the countries that's being exploited. And we, you know, not because of our choice, we were born into countries that are one of the countries that exploits other countries to make our clothes, our food, our electronics goods. And it's just the sad reality of life, to be honest.
How come this episode became so serious?
I don't know.
The last one was so funny and carefree, and now we're all like heavy talking about like child labor.
It's your fault. You'll fix the cheapest chips.
Yeah.
I mean, what else?
Are chips that cheap these days, Paul?
The McDonald's ones are, but they're also like cardboard.
Yeah.
So, I mean, regular chips, if you go to a posh or a hipster burger place, the chips will set you back like €5. Yeah. I mean, they're pretty good, so they're not really cheap as chips anymore.
Tell you what, those expensive chips in a hipster burger place, they cost an arm and a leg, don't they?
They do cost an arm and a leg. But you know what? Those hipster burger places, they're really another kettle of fish. You know, they're a different level. It's just...
True indeed. Let's do another one. Okay.
This one shouldn't be depressing.
So imagine a situation, right? There's a bloke in a pub.
Yep.
Yeah, he's saying, I got into a bit of a fight the other day. Got a few bruises on my fist there. I punched a bloke. But, you know, to be honest with you, he was... Right.
He was an idiot.
So he was behaving in a way that was inviting...
A fight.
A problem or a fight. So this basically
being
means...
Being an idiot.
Doing something that could easily result in someone getting angry or aggressive with you. Okay.
He was being like my wife. He was...
so it's like... Okay, I'll give it to you.
No. Give me a clue. Give me some more clues.
Oh, to request problems. Just another way of saying that.
You're looking for a fight. Looking for a fight?
Yeah, looking for a fight or... Can I have trouble, please?
Looking for trouble?
Asking for trouble.
Asking for trouble. Okay.
So he was asking for trouble.
He was asking for trouble, yeah.
So I think he's asking for it. Or asking for trouble. That means, like, you know, behaving in a way that would provoke...
He was asking for trouble.
Aggressive or angry responses.
Yeah.
You're asking for it. What would be considered asking for trouble in the UK, do you think?
Like a specific scenario?
Yeah, like if you know, if you're in a pub and you get into a fight and the bloke was going, well, he was asking for it, what would be considered asking for it?
Well, if, for example, you're in a pub and... let's say you're in a pub and you're a white person in a pub and just next to you, there's a couple of non-white people being racist towards white people and saying, oh, those white people, blah, blah, blah. And then you get into a fight with that person. You could say, well, he was asking for it. Sorry, what was the thing? He was asking for trouble. He was asking for trouble because he was being racist about me. And so we had a discussion and then we ended up in a fight. But he was asking for trouble because he was being racist in the public area.
Yeah, he's getting larry.
Again, it's another serious topic.
It's suddenly you're a race. Suddenly there's a race.
We're racist child labourers.
We've had deeply critical reviews of our.
I don't think we should
work.
Ever drink beer before a podcast.
No,
again.
we had a small, admittedly very modest bottle of Kronenbourg at 4.2% each.
Well, we were asking for it, weren't we?
We were clearly we're two English guys, two partially ginger English men sitting in almost direct sunlight on the continent of Europe, away from home. In 34 degree temperatures, having drunk beer, we're just asking for it, aren't we, Paul?
Yeah, we're asking for trouble.
We're asking for
and we're giving
trouble.
It.
Yeah. Right. So we had asking for trouble there. Next one is all right. So this is an expression to describe someone who is not really down to earth.
They're sort of pretentious.
A bit of a dreamer. It's not really negative.
Lives in the clouds.
It's like that. Yeah,
idiot.
This is a person
Paul
who...
Paul Taylor.
No.
According to the comments that I've been getting.
It's fairly positive, really.
Oh, okay.
It's not too negative. You would describe, let's say, a girl that you know who is always sort of daydreaming and isn't completely connected to reality. Instead, she's having an adventure with some mythical creatures.
Having sex with a unicorn?
No, not having sex with a unicorn. Not this time.
Well, adventure with... not this
Although
time, next
that's
time.
That's not a bad idea. But, it means she is not here. She is.
She's. Oh, yeah.
Just give me that word.
She's not there.
Here. Where is she?
She's
she
there. She's out there.
She's away.
She's away.
Yeah. Away with who?
Away with the pixies. Away with the fairies.
Yes.
Away with the fairies.
Away with the fairies.
There we go. She's so away with the fairies.
What are fairies, Paul?
Fairies are, if you've ever watched Peter Pan or read Peter Pan, Tinkerbell mm-hmm. is a fairy. It's a very small female with wings that can fly.
Yeah.
So I don't think you can have male fairies, can you?
Probably can in some stories. There are probably male fairies in some stories. I mean, Peter Pan isn't a fairy, is he? No.
No, because he doesn't have wings.
No, he
doesn't. I mean, he may be a fairy.
Right, because fairy's got another meaning, ladies and gentlemen, which Paul is hinting at. A fairy is also a sort
derogatory
of
term for a homosexual.
Exactly. So, was Peter Pan a fairy? Well, we never really got to know him that well, did we, in order to find out. But anyway, a fairy, the most common use of the word fairy is to describe a little mini lady, probably, with wings,
yep.
like Tinkerbell.
That has magical powers.
Or in, like, the Legend of Zelda game. In the Legend of Zelda, the Ocarina yep. of Time, yep. Link is followed around by a little fairy
Correct.
Called Navi.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've forgotten the name of that.
And also,
that's a great game.
The Tooth Fairy.
The Tooth Fairy, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, to be away with the fairies, that means that you're not really on planet Earth. Your mind is somewhere else. So, you know, you might have like a young girl who seems to be a bit, what's the word, a bit sort of distracted and a little bit dreamy.
You might have that in your classrooms when you're teaching English
totally.
In a classroom and you see somebody who's daydreaming, you might be like, oh, well, he's away with the fairies.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. You have some students who are like that. Some students are really switched on and concentrating all the time. And other students, they're just like, hello, welcome back to planet Earth. And you can go, yeah. Oh, God, she's away with the fairies, isn't she?
Yeah, we have that out of comedy shows sometimes where people are not listening and they're away with the fairies.
Yeah.
And then they write a bad trip advice.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Which fairies were they with, Paul?
They were with clearly not very nice fairies.
Negative, critical fairies.
Yeah, anyway. That was good.
We're not bitter about this review at all.
I was fine about it until now, and now that real anger's coming out, I want to punch someone.
I elicited that from you, I think.
You did. It's cathartic.
Number
though.
9. This is when you are trying to achieve something, but again, it's a bit negative. But you're trying to achieve something, right? And something goes wrong, and you have to go all the way to the start.
Back
again.
To square one.
Yes.
There we go.
Sort of a board game analogy.
Yeah, you've got to go back to square one, like Monopoly has squares.
Yeah.
Any board game really. Trivial Pursuit. A lot of board games have squares where you move little people along them. So if you have to go back to square one, it means that you have to start all over again.
Yeah. All right.
So yeah.
Yeah. Fine. Good. And then the last one, number 10. Now this is also the title of another podcast out there produced by two American girls, but you don't know that podcast because obviously, all you need is Luke's English podcast.
It's true.
This is when you're really listening to someone very carefully. So go ahead, go on.
All ears.
Yeah, I'm all ears.
Unless you've cut off your ear because it's a tooth for a tooth, an eye for an eye, and an ear for an ear.
In which case.
But I'm all ears, yeah. Or you're all ear.
I'm all, yeah.
Well, Van Gogh was all ear.
He wasn't all there. That's for sure.
Hey.
There's a joke in there somewhere. Now I've got a joke about Van Gogh. I've done it on the podcast before.
Yeah.
So I went into the pub yesterday, right?
Yeah.
I went in and I saw Van Gogh sitting in the corner.
Oh yeah.
And I said to him, "Oi, Vincent, do you want a drink?" And he said, "No, thanks. I've got one ear." All right, so ought to be all ears. It's like, yeah, go ahead, I'm listening. Go on, I'm all ears, meaning I'm listening to everything you're saying. Yeah. Can you imagine, Paul, if you were literally all ears, if you were just made constructed from ears, like you were just made of like
you'd probably
a
have
ears.
A massive headache.
You would
from hearing everything that's going on.
Yeah, you'd be like very good at listening.
Well, that might be I think that would have been a better film if Mel Gibson was made of all ears in that film, What Women Want. Do you ever remember that film?
Yeah, What Women Want, which is all about Mel Gibson learning about how to communicate with women.
Yeah, and he could hear everything that the women were thinking. But if he was made of all ears, that would have been a much better film.
But he wouldn't be very attractive, would he, if he was made of all ears?
No.
He would be quite quite hideous, really.
There's some attractive ears out there.
Yeah, like, but not when all of the ears are joined together to create a human form. But if you look closely, it's sort of, it would be hideous. It'd be disgusting. It's like every part of the body is made from an ear. You know, did you ever see that that picture of a mouse?
It was involved in a
genetic experiment, and they grew an ear on the back of a mouse.
Yeah,
that was like half ear. That mouse.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, imagine a creature that's made exclusively from ears.
Ear Man. That's the next Marvel Studios film. We've just had Ant Man.
Yeah.
The next one will be Ear Man.
Ear Man. And
where he can hit like Ant Man's very small, so he can go across everything and see things that he couldn't see. And Ear Man would be the same thing, but he's just got amazing hearing. Yeah.
And then people could say, "Oi, come here, man." And he'd be like, "What? Say it again."
And then he just ejaculates.
Right. Okay. Okay, then.
Come here, whatever. This is degenerated, but we've done 10.
We'd managed to do 10 without much fanfare at the end. And so there we are. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, did you follow all of that episode? Now, I invite you to leave your responses at the end of this episode, even if they're negative, okay? But just bear in mind, if you'd like to leave a negative review, that you just try and make it positive. And secondly, that you are aware that we will judge the quality of the review, okay? So that's our choice. Paul, at the end of this episode... Quite unintentionally, this episode has become... It seems to have been dominated by this review. It was supposed to be mentioned just for a couple of minutes, like because it was interesting because there was a language problem with it. Yeah. But it's been like it's underscored the entire episode with a certain sense of slight
bitterness.
I'm fine with it.
You're more angry than I am.
I am.
And she wasn't. It wasn't like she said, "Oh, Luke Thompson was only
funny." Because I wasn't even mentioned. I think that's what it was.
Yeah, they say all press is good press, don't they?
Yeah, all publicity is good publicity.
Yeah.
Even negative things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
all right.
Well, that's the lesson you should learn.
That's promising. It's certainly.
Listeners, you should continue with your dream. And if you're listening to this podcast, I presume one of your dreams is to learn English fluently. So continue on that journey, whatever obstacles there might be. Even if you're listening to this podcast and the obstacle is there's a person in the metro or the underground playing really loud music and you can't hear this, that would be an obstacle. Mm-hmm. Push through that obstacle and reach your dream of speaking English to the best of your ability and forget the people that say that you can't do it.
Yeah, don't... I mean, Paul said push through that obstacle if it's, for example, a person playing loud music in front of you. Don't literally push through that obstacle.
Oh, I think they should.
That would be aggressive. You think you should just shove the guy?
Just get the accordion out of the way. No one needs any more accordions in this world.
Yeah. Well,
or guitar players in the public transport.
Well, just
push them out of the way.
In some places, they love accordions. Like, for example, from tourists come from America here, and they're like, "Oh my God, an accordion player!
That's so cute.
Oh my God, that's so quaint.
Oh my God, there's so but entertainment everywhere in Paris."
What they don't realize is that these accordion guys are everywhere, and it's like, okay,
they play the same song.
Too much accordion overload. So maybe they need to redistribute the accordions around the world.
I think that's, like redistribution of wealth. They should just redistribute accordions.
Right.
That should be a good polity, a good policy from the next Prime Minister.
Maybe the Prime Minister could make a speech and he could say, according to recent laws, we've had to redistribute the accordions. And the journalist would say, "Sorry, can you say that again?" Yeah, sure. According to recent laws, and the journalists would say, "Prime Minister, are you trying to make a joke about the word accordion and the word according?" And the Prime Minister would go, no, of course not. And the journalist would go, "Now, come on, yes, you are. Everyone noticed it." And the Prime Minister would say, "All right, fair enough. I did try and make a joke. Sorry.
Yeah. So all that to say is push through the accordion players that are... that are your barriers to learning and listening to Luke's English podcast.
Yeah.
By the way, you should share the Facebook page because Luke is almost at 10,000 likes.
Yeah.
It's at 9,900 and something.
9,920,
I think.
Yeah, in that region.
So you should share that page because, starting from 10,000, Luke will start getting money from Facebook. He'll start getting paid.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh.
Wow, you're getting really excited there.
I was like, I'm actually going to get some money?
No.
All right, okay. Well, there you go. All right, ladies and gents. So, in conclusion, well, this is conclusion number two. I've already wrapped it up.
I think it's like
once.
The third conclusion.
This is maybe the third time I've attempted to end this episode. But in conclusion, I would just like to say, did you manage to get those 10 expressions? Let me just run through them again with you. All's well that ends well. Which is a good way to end the podcast, but I'm not going
to. You should have gone from 10 to 1.
I'll go from 10 to 1. So we had to be all ears. Yeah, I'm listening. I'm all ears, for example. I suppose I'm going to have to go back to square one now. Are you concentrating? You're a bit away with the fairies today, aren't you? And it's like, well, you know, I'm not surprised it happened. He was asking for trouble. And, God, it's brilliant. I love the cheese in these supermarkets. It's as cheap as chips. Cheese, I don't know, random example. Cheese, you know, that's another kettle of fish, isn't it? You know, totally different situation there.
Cheese is another kettle of fish compared to French cheese.
Yeah, it is. And English cheese, it's still delicious. Imagine if the bread was as good as this in England. Yeah, and pigs will fly. there you go. Just go to the supermarket, get your bread, get your cheese, get a bit of butter.
Bob's your uncle.
You got a nice sandwich. If you steal my cheese, then I will find you. I will hunt you down and I will steal your cheese, Paul.
An eye for an eye.
Because an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And here we are now at the end of this episode, and it's been quite a roller coaster ride of emotions, this one, for us anyway. We've gone from the peaks and highs of just being on the podcast to the serious depths of considering issues like how to deal with negativity. Slave labor, did we come across that?
We did child slave labor specifically.
And race related violence. But now here we are, Paul. I feel good now upon completing this episode because ultimately all's well that ends well, isn't it?
Exactly.
Okay. Thanks for listening to the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. There'll be more stuff available to you somehow in your ears, I'd imagine, soon. But for now, it's time for me to say goodbye. So here it is. Goodbye. Bye. 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 Thanks again for listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of Luke's English podcast. What you're now going to hear is a few outtakes. What are outtakes? Well, these are when, for example, a film is being made or a television program or maybe a song in the studio or, in this case, a podcast, when that's being made and mistakes happen. And so those mistakes are rejected or not included in the final recording. So you see outtakes at the end of movies sometimes. You know, comedy movies, you see the moments where the actors get the lines wrong or they all laugh uncontrollably. Here are a few outtakes from this episode of Luke's English podcast. What happened here is that sometimes at the beginning of episodes, I find it difficult to get the introduction right. And I start saying something and then I make a mistake and I have to start again. Or I start saying it and I realize that I'm talking too much and I'm not making any sense. For one reason or another, it's quite common for me to do false starts. Often I find lots of outtakes on my memory card after recording an episode. So in this case, there are about 6 or 7 outtakes, and I thought this time I'd put them at the end of the podcast episode just to give you a bit of a laugh. Okay, so that's what you're going to hear now, a few Luke's English podcast outtakes from episode number 285. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Luke's English podcast. This is it. The wait is over. I know that you've been basically spending the last 4 weeks glued to your computer or your mobile device. You've probably been sitting there thinking, what's going on? Where's Luke? Is he okay? What's happening? I need some sign that the podcast is coming back. Well, this is it, everyone. Okay. You can rest now. You can eat, you can, you know, drink water and everything like that. It's fine. Normal life has returned because here is another episode of Luke's English podcast. I hope that you've been waiting for it. I hope so. Here it is. Now, what's going on in this episode? Well, we're on familiar territory. I say familiar because the situation here is quite similar to the way in which I've recorded other episodes recently. What that means is that I'm joined by Paul Taylor again, who's sitting to my left. Hello, Paul.
Hi.
Interesting way to say hi there.
I know, that was a bit camp, wasn't it? Hi! Hiya!
It's not normally that camp. Normally it's just a bit normal. Camp? We're going to have to come
back
camp, to that, maybe.
Camp, a funny story about camp, which I might say for later. Carry on with your introduction. It was going well.
I'll let you guess, everyone, what camp actually means. But, you know, when someone... I mean... Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Luke's English Podcast. How are you doing? I hope that... Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Luke's English Podcast. What are you laughing at? No, it's going to...
Sorry.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of... Why am I speaking like this? Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of this award-winning podcast for learners of English, which you know is called Luke's English Podcast. No, I don't like that. I've really got... Hello, everybody. Welcome to...
No.
Hello, everyone. For you talk... Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Luke's English Podcast. How are you? I realise you can't actually respond to that, as I've already established in previous episodes. Oh, Paul, don't laugh. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Luke's English Podcast. Yes, it's time for another episode. Maybe you've been waiting by the computer all this time, sitting there staring at the screen, just desperately hoping that a new episode would appear. Well, the wait is up because here it is. We're rolling again and I'm recording another episode. I've been away for about a month. What have I been doing? Well, you know, just getting married and dealing with all of that kind of thing. I'll be doing an episode.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.